Schaefer, for those of you who weren't here at the official welcome. I'm the president and CEO of RSF Social Finance, and we're going to discuss the topic today called Transforming the Way the World Works with Money. And part of the reason that I'm interested in we're doing this is so the little ones, like my daughter Sabine here, who will be co-presenting with me, or at least supporting in some ways, can have a good world to grow up in for themselves. For those of you that have been reading the headlines, you know that our financial system and the way that we work with money as a culture is broken, and that the system itself requires healing, and that will require each one of us to take steps to change how we work with money so that we can evolve a different culture of money than we have today. So you're going to hear momentarily from several RSF clients, people who are close with us, who have pioneering stories of their own, and I'll introduce them briefly in a moment. And we hope to have a fair amount of interactivity in this session where we're either not just fielding questions from you all, but there can actually be some dialogue amongst you all as well. So we're going to try and keep our remarks relatively short. This is a very special day for me. I was reflecting on the way in today when I saw, I remembered that Robert McDermott is going to be speaking later this afternoon. For many years, he was the head of the California Institute of Integral Studies. And in 1994, they had a fledgling business program that they had started. This is before the term sustainability was around, before the term impact investing, or way before any of these terms were around. But I was really intrigued because I read a book called Mindfulness and Meaningful Work by Claude Whitmire. And what this program was purporting to do was to look at business and finance differently and develop a whole MBA program around that. And this within a school that specializes in religion and philosophy and meaning of East and West. How many people have heard of CIS here in the room? Quite a few. That's good. So an unusual place to house an MBA program. And I read that book and I saw this program mentioned on the back cover, and I went to go see Robert McDermott speak, and that was probably in summer of 1994, and then entered that program a couple months later, and it didn't stick at CIS because the focus there is so much around religion and psychology and philosophy. It was hard for business and finance to really land there. But I often think that the current programs, MBA programs, that are the most innovative, like the Presidio School of Management's MBA program, or Dominican College, or Bainbridge Institute, that a lot of their curriculum and pedagogy came from that program. So it's a nice full circle for me to have Robert McDermott speaking today. So on to the topic at hand. I've been personally very interested and compelled in how the world works with money for many years, and I thought instead of me talking about what we're trying to do at RSF and what we believe needs to happen on a much more substantial scale, you know, around the country and around the world, I thought I'd show a short video that I just learned about 3 days ago through this gentleman's name is Kyle Tierman, who you'll see in the video in a moment, and he's a surfer. And we have a blog post on our website called Surfer Moving Millions that is trying to get word of this video out further. He lives in Santa Cruz, and he's a good friend of a very good friend of mine. And I think that he does a phenomenal job of explaining one aspect of what needs to change in our financial system if we want to transform the way the world works with money. So can you cue the video? Oh, thanks. Just to cue this up, this is Kyle Tierman giving a talk in Santa Cruz at a TEDx conference. If you're familiar with the TED conferences, this is his 5-minute talk at one of those.
I had this dream last night where I came up here naked, so close. I love to surf, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel around the world surfing from a really young age. When I was a senior in high school, I learned about something that that really caught my attention. I learned that when you put money into a bank, that money doesn't stay there. I learned that banks actually use your money to lend out and make loans. So just like when you need a home loan, right, to buy a house, big corporations also need big loans to move forward with projects. So when you look at this system, banks rely on us for our money, and corporations rely on banks to move forward with projects. So we are actually the ones in the driver's seat here. When I was 18, I took an awesome trip down to Chile. Chile is like, it's like California, but like 100 years ago. And the waves are great, the people are friendly, the landscape's beautiful. And I was surfing in a place called Constitucion. And there was a proposed coal power plant going in on the beach, right in this town. And all the locals were against this coal power plant. And one of the locals actually took me out to the site of this coal plant. And it was a really heavy experience for me because I was able to see firsthand the unfair destruction of a corporation coming into a community against the citizens' will and destroying it. And that experience of going to that the site of the coal plant, this is right near there, that's me serving. And it really affected me. And I thought back to what I learned in school about how banks make it possible for corporations to move forward with projects. So I did some research, and I was wondering, like, I wonder what bank is making this possible. So I did some research and found out that Bank of America was the funder of this coal company, and it was a weird experience because I was able to see for the first time that it was our money being used to fund the destruction of this community down in Chile. And I felt like if it's our money that's making this possible, then we have the power to stop it. And I felt like if other surfers could see what I was able to see firsthand, then it might affect them in the same way. And so what else I learned is not all banks are the same. So you put your money into a bank like Bank of America, and it's sucked out of your community to fund, say, a coal power plant. I learned that Bank of America is one of the largest funders of coal power worldwide. If you put your money into a local bank, it's also lent out. But it's lent out within your community. So it's really exciting because in a time when our national economy is in trouble, we have the power to keep our money within local banks and have strong, resilient local economies, even when the national economy is in trouble, which is really exciting because you have the power to stop funding the problem and start funding the solution all in one move. So I made a four-minute movie about my experience down in Chile and encouraged surfers to move their money, open accounts at local banks. And this movie went out on YouTube, and a bunch of surfers started passing it around, and then surfers started taking action and then inspiring other surfers to take action. And then surf companies started moving their money. And then people who didn't surf started moving their money. And I released this movie when I was 19, and I'm 21 now, and to date, I've documented over $340 million of lending power being moved out of Bank of America and into local banks around the country. And this experience in Chile totally led me on the path that I'm on now. Now I run a free online TV series called Surfing for Change, where I take a surf trip and document a social or environmental issue happening in that town and tie it back to Santa Cruz and show a systemic action, daily decision that we can take that will then have a systemic impact both on our community as well as the lives of people on the trip that I went on. So I hope that you check that out, surfingforchange.com. You know, since my experience in Chile, what I've really learned and taken with me is that through your daily decisions, you have the power to change your community. And through your daily decisions, you have the power to change the lives of other people around the world. And this change starts with something as simple as opening an account in a local bank. Thank you.
So thank you, I might appreciate that. Because it's a fairly simple, straightforward description of the way we all need to think, which is to think more about where our money is going, whether it's when you, whether you're banking, how you're investing your money, what products you're purchasing at the store. And I think a lot of us are starting to connect the dots more. And just to give you one example at RSF that we feel is simple and concrete, yet profound about how we work with money, is we have about 1,200 investors into our core loan fund. And then we lend that money out to, right now, about 70 borrowers. And they are from Waldorf schools to other kinds of nonprofit organizations to for-profit social enterprises like those in the Bay Area, Indigenous Design, so we'll hear from momentarily from Scott, New Leaf Paper, UDT, some names that you've heard of. And these are businesses that are trying to change the world as well. And so what we're trying to do is not only channel more funds to these kinds of organizations, but to help the investors be more visible to the borrowers and vice versa. So because we feel like if they can build a relationship or if they can at least know of each other, then there's a chance of a much healthier financial transaction in many other ways. So one way that we're doing that is every quarter we bring together representatives of our investors and representatives of the borrowers to meet and actually get to know each other. And then not only that, but they talk about what rate of return the investors should get and what interest rate the borrowers should pay. So this would be like if you had a checking account at Bank of America and they called you down, they called you up on a Wednesday night and they said, you know, Monday, we'd like you to come down to the branch and we'd like to introduce you to a lot of the borrowers. You know, we're using your money to lend out to them. And not only that, but we'd like to have you help us determine what rate of return you should get if you have a CD or checking account with us. And then what interest rate the borrowers should pay. So that's a fairly radical thing. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. You know, at the bigger banks. And so it's just one way that we're trying to make more direct, more transparent, more personal the relationship between investors and borrowers and vice versa in our funds. And I'd be remiss to say that I greatly encourage you to go to local banks here, as Kyle talked about, whether it's New Resource Bank or One Pacific Coast Bank or Exchange Bank up north. We also at RSF, as I say, run our own loan fund, and for a minimum of $1,000, you can feel like you're making a very direct contribution. It's an investment because you're getting your money back plus a small premium. And so it's one of the few places where you can do that, where you can feel like you're enabling loans to Waldorf schools and all manner of Steiner-inspired organizations, as well as the for-profit businesses that I mentioned. So if you want to talk to me about that later, I'd like to. So I have here three RSF clients, and each of them is extremely pioneering and innovative in their own ways. And so I'd like to have them, I'm going to do a very quick introduction. I'd like to have them talk about their experience, what they'd like to see in the world in terms of transforming the way the world works with money, and also their experience of working with RSF and what they've seen that's different about RSF. So Jeffrey Westman, if you want to wave your hand, Jeffrey's going to talk first. Jeffrey is a parent and a high-level contributing force at the Summerfield Waldorf School, just north here in Sebastopol. He's also been a very successful technology executive, and now is doing work consulting in the biodynamics area and in other ways. So I'll let Jeffrey talk a little bit about his background, his experience with RSF. And then Michael Davis, Michael, if you would raise your hand, is a longtime RSF client, is pioneering on so many levels. It'd be hard to list them all, I'll just list one, which is his work with biodynamic farms to preserve them, get certain of them into a land foundation called the Yggdrasil Land Foundation, that then preserves biodynamics on that land in perpetuity. And there are many other things that we've done to collaborate with Michael over the years, and so we'll talk about his experience. And then Scott Leonard, on the end there, is founder and CEO of Indigenous Designs, which is a fair trade organic clothing and fashion company based up here in Santa Rosa that is so pioneering, I don't know where to start. They basically created a supply chain from scratch in the Andes, in Peru and in Ecuador, where they are working with hundreds of small artisan weavers there to produce the products that they then sell here up north. And so creating a livelihood for them, and then using all organically derived materials as well. So Scotty will talk a little bit about his experience. So Jeffrey, you want to kick it off?
I was not really sure what to talk about, and I met with Dawn the other day, and we talked about a couple of things, and I thought I'd start off with a couple of anecdotes that would just help illustrate where all of a sudden it started to come clear to me what social finance was about. I come from a very traditional business background. I've run subsidiaries, international subsidiaries of publicly listed companies here. I've run a couple publicly listed companies in Scandinavia. And I can't say there was a social aspect to any of it. The only aspect it was is go out and get as much money as you can, trash and burn, and come back with as much as you possibly can get. And I never felt good about that, and it always seemed real short-sighted, but it was always sort of an instinctive thing. And then this last winter, I went and spent most of the winter in Europe, and I was in Germany, and I went to Triodos Bank, and I met the president of Triodos Bank, and we went out to lunch, and we were talking about an organization or a company in Norway that they had worked with, and what had gone wrong with that company, because it eventually failed. And we were sitting there, and he explained to me how they had brought these massive amount of flow forms. And for those of you who don't know what a flow form is, it's a vessel that moves water in a double vortex to energize the product they were making. And it was a fantastic innovation. And he sat across the table from me, and he said, you know, you just can't bring that much energy and that much force from the ethereals into an organization without properly preparing the people who work there. And that's why it failed. And I was sitting there across from this guy in a dark suit and a red tie, and I thought, is he really a banker? I couldn't put it together. And then just a couple days later, I was back in Copenhagen, and I met with an associate from here who was visiting, coming to look at a company. And I took him actually to a large farm that Triodos had helped finance. And I was explaining to him the whole concept of Triodos, which then segued into RSF. And in the middle of our conversation, he looked at me and he said, are you talking about a biodynamic bank? And I could see the light went on for him. I said, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about something that takes into consideration the entire ecosystem. When I got back, actually, shortly after those meetings, RSF came to Summerfield to hold one of their pricing meetings, which I didn't actually really know. As a board member of Summerfield, I was very skeptical and very leery of taking on debt. We were pushed into a corner from a really old construction project that never quite got finished, that we had to get finished now in order to move forward. And I just didn't really like the idea of having to take on debt. I wanted to figure out if we could do a capital campaign, if we could self-finance through our cash flow, whatever. It proved to be way too large for that. Then I heard about RSF. I heard about the pricing. Well, actually, I knew about RSF at that point, but I heard that RSF was willing to work with us on funding the project. And then when I heard about the pricing meeting, which I got recruited to cook pizzas for everyone. So I cooked 100 pizzas that evening while they were all discussing interest rates. I just thought, how amazingly civilized to get together and talk about what we can afford and what we'd like to get in return. And it just made perfect sense to me. And then I felt at that point very comfortable to be able to vote to say, yes, we should borrow a lot of money from RSF to be able to execute this project properly. And then at some point, a couple days after that, I actually met somebody who's here in the room today who said, yeah, I was at the pricing meeting, great pizzas. And by the way, I was there both as an investor and a borrower, so I represented both sides of the table. And I thought, oh, that's fantastic. You know, where that certainly doesn't happen at Bank of America. So, you know, the next natural step to this concept of social finance in the context of Summerfield or the world of Waldorf is something we work with called tuition assistance. I mean, if you go on the Summerfield website, you will find a price list of tuition. And, you know, in a perfect world, everybody would come there and just pay that. Actually, probably wouldn't be a perfect world. It would be a much less perfect world if everybody paid that. We put that up, you know, it's a starting point. We have to budget from somewhere. So we look at that and say, we have our 400 students, all of them are going to pay that. That's a value that we potentially could gain. But then we go into our own little pricing meetings with every individual family who can't quite pay that, and we negotiate with them and figure out what they can pay and make them a part of our community and find something that's comfortable and that they can work with, and then we grow, build, and nurture the community that we have. At the same time, we go back to those people that are paying full tuition and probably could pay more, and we have pricing meetings with them, and we ask them, how much more can you support to cover this gap for these other people that aren't there? And it works out beautifully. It's a lot of work, yes, it's a lot of education, but it's seamless. The school runs beautifully. We've grown. We have, especially right now, since I came on the board 6 years ago, just an amazing energy and spirit there. I mean, we have, you know, some of the things Paul was talking about earlier, if you were here, about biodynamics, there's this sense of harmony, there's this sense of nurturing that's on the campus that's just, you can't escape it. You come there and there, you feel the magic. And for me, what it really comes down to is relationships. It's all about nurturing those existing relationships, building new relationships that you can then pull those people into your community and work forward and support and help one another, and looking for what's the next relationship that we should be building and how will they fit in. And finding that harmony in a vast, great society of people, and then doing it all very much on a local scale. So for me, it's all about, it comes back to just what Dawn was talking about, it's about supporting our local community, but every part of it, not just those with the, not just the haves. So that's pretty much what I was thinking about.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Sabine wants to talk next. I think Michael will talk next.
What's that?
Despite
the fact that Sabine wants to talk next.
Can I do this sitting down? Okay. I'm the chief administrative officer of a modest family foundation. I operate this foundation with my wife, Jill, who's here, in a small group of professionals. We've been affiliated and worked with RSF for about 10 years. I see the title on their web page, or the statement on the web page, transforming the way the world works with money. But to be honest, I've never understood it. Given us a test where they say, tell us how you're going to transform the way the world works with money. They never asked us that question. So to some extent, really ignored that statement because our work in RSF is very practical. It has been for the last 10 years. We've been both a borrower, we've been a lender, and we've been a donor. It was interesting. I was very honored to be asked to sit here and to join this panel. Though I was a little puzzled, how am I going to address this question? How we transform the way the world works with money? Because in our organization, we don't have that conversation. that is too, I would describe it as too grand an idea, too much of a large picture. We work in a very modest and very small way. And so I went back and reviewed our history. We haven't really reflected so much on our work with RSF. And I went back to our first grant, which we made 10 years ago. We came to RSF looking for assistance in designing what I would describe as a very modest grant. And we were looking for help with design and execution. And the response we got from the officer who was assigned to that project was completely unique in our experience. And I've been engaged in nonprofit and foundation work for 40 years. Since 1971, and I've worked with a lot of foundations, a lot of private foundations, a lot of other charities. And that first response from that first RSF officer 10 years ago was a completely unique experience. And as it turned out, it changed the entire destiny of our work and our foundation. So in fact, as I discovered at 6 a.m. this morning preparing to sit here, I realized that, in fact, working with RSF has changed the way we, as an organization, work with money. I can't speak to the world in and of itself, but I can speak to our very small organization. And if you were to ask, how is it, what is it, what were the qualities that changed at that point in time, it's very hard to put one's finger on it and to describe it. But I think it speaks to again, I apologize, this is too abstract, but starting from the very beginning, RSF expanded our experience of money. It was a qualitative difference. There's a tendency in the world for money to be quantitative and for the world to lose dimension. Explosion of electronics and screens, things moving from three dimensions to two dimensions as an example. And our experience with RSF, starting in the very beginning, was to go in the opposite direction. It was to expand our experience and to seek the qualities of our engagement with money. And these are qualities that are probably resonant throughout the morning in all the various activities that have been inspired by Real Steinman, but it was just another example. And I'm looking back now as I've reviewed the last 10 years. RSF is our central partner in almost everything we do, and we model ourselves on RSF. There are two particular characteristics that come forward in our experience. One is, we are a planet far out in the periphery orbiting RSF as an example. So I'm speaking as an outsider, speaking of our experience in working with them. But they appear consistently to put ethics first on an operational basis. They push ethics forward out front. And I feel that, for example, when we bring a project or propose to RSF, the first filter appears to be an ethical one. What are the ethics of this idea? And it can be unconscious. It's not an obvious. It's not like they're checking off a box that we have to ask these questions. But it seems to be built into the organization. And there's a depth, and associated with that, there's a depth of integrity that we just don't encounter anywhere else. Those elements, I think, are the characteristic ones. There's a term that emerged maybe 30, 40 years ago in the investing world, referred to as socially responsible investing. And I had a conversation with one of the founders of that movement, Wayne Silby of Calvert, and I said, how did we come up with that term socially responsible investing? And he said, it's an awful term, I agree, we just fell onto it, we didn't have anything better. And I said, why isn't it just responsible investing? Why is it social responsible investing? And I fall back to ethics seems to be so self-evident, so obvious, and so time immemorial, and yet the way RSF practices ethics appears, in our experience, to be unique. One result of that, and I'll end on this note, another experience that we had very early on that kept us involved with RSF. There's an old adage in the financial markets that the financial markets are ruled by fear and greed. And that has been my personal experience. And working in that environment is not one that I have found optimal for myself. And engaging with RSF, it was the first time I had worked with money where there appeared to be an absence of fear. And that, I think, is, I can't emphasize the importance enough of the value of creating such an environment.
We just like to see a lot of other financial institutions approaching it this way. But thanks very much, Michael, for saying that. Scott?
Yeah, sure. I'll do the sitting down, I suppose. First of all, I really love the TED experience. My roots, actually, I started on my business career in the surf industry as a pioneer. So it spoke to me for sure. When I say as a pioneer, I've always been interested in environment. And being a surfer, back in the day, we were really before our time, and we were an environmental surf shop. And we focused on water, which when I first saw today, when I walked actually into the room, and Don said, "You know, I'm going to ask you what would the world look like if it was transformed?" I said, "Wow, that's a big question. How much time do we have here?" And you know, all joking aside, I would answer that question two ways, maybe three, maybe four or five, but. Two personal things that I would like to say. One is, outside of the fact that we really need to pay attention to our water tables, to the lifeblood of what keeps us all here on the planet, and the fact that we have not brought that into the equation, not necessarily just for ourselves here in the room, but for our daughters, our children of the future. So in a perfect world, we would be paying more attention to this, our water tables. And the other is a personal interest in the disparity and the inequities that exists not only in other countries that I've seen that we actually work in as a fashion brand, but also here in the United States. So those are two personal things that are dear to me, that if it was a vision of the world changing, we would be paying attention to that. But if I was gonna make a broad stroke statement as to maybe more pertinent also to RSF, is could we pay attention to each and every transaction? And for us at Indigenous, where we actually say we're transforming the world one garment at a time, very much RSF is actually transforming the way that we look at transactions. If we could, as a culture, if we could, as just people in general on the planet, look at the ripple effect, as to how things truly unfold, the supply chain, the choices that we make, big on the list is voting with our dollars. In fact, and that might be a good segue for me to say that RSF has supported us to really, I'll back up for a second. Indigenous is a company that is a for-profit, but we have continued to do a lot of socioeconomic work. So we're sort of blurring that line, and in a very positive way, RSF is helping us blur that line. And that kind of sounds strange, but I've really appreciated RSF being able to do the deep dive into what transaction means and how all these things affect communities, and pushing other organizations, other financial institutions, to go that direction. So I guess back to if I could really envision a world of transformation, I would look at how we all are being mindful of the decisions that we make, the impact that we have on both a positive and a negative level. And I'm not sure if you actually want to ask other questions or if you want to go. I'd like to actually take an opportunity to tell you a little bit about a project that RSF recently has engaged in with Indigenous, which is a PRI, a project or program-related investment that has helped us to dig very deep into what they call the social return on investment, the SRI. And we're working at the bottom base of the pyramid to actually take back information using cell phones, if you will. Cell phones, you might not think, are readily available, or it seems, to me, it was like, wow, cell phones are being used by the base of the pyramid, almost like it's an important vehicle for the car. I mean, lots of families use this as a device to communicate. So we decided that we were going to reach out to each and every one of these communities and these artisans, over 1,500 of them, and show them how we could interact through the cell phone. So we're asking them out of poverty index questions through the Grameen Bank has come up with, which are very interesting questions. But we're doing this through the cell phone technology that RSF has allowed us to be a pioneer in. So you might be asking yourself, what does that have to do with fashion? We see it as a threefold opportunity. We can actually interact and give data back to our investors and to financial institutions like RSF. We see it as an opportunity to actually interact with our core customer, to give them a reason why we're different as a fashion brand, why we care. And in and around that, I think it's also that we're able to just share that information internally to understand where we are as a company. So that's something that we're really proud of that we're working on right now, and it's very cutting edge.
Great. So. Thanks. I think given the amount of time we have, it'd be great to hear from any of you that have either questions for any of us up here, or comments, or things that, in terms of how you'd like to see the world change and how we all work with money. So any comments or questions, people could raise their hands, things that you're thinking about? Always hard to get started, don't be shy. Yes?
Don, can you ask
I'll repeat
Michael
the question? Yeah.
If you have to, I'm just wondering if there are systemic efforts to allow fear to dissolve or sublimate in the larger macro system that we live in.
Mm-hmm. You say your name and where you're from?
My name is Sudeep Motubelli Rao. I'm from Baby Hunters Point in San Francisco.
Okay. So Sudeep from here in San Francisco is wondering what ways fear can be mitigated in the financial system. Perhaps that's a small question for you, Michael.
I don't know why you're handing this to me. I don't want to be overly repetitive, but our experience on these questions is not cognitive. We don't work with RSF so much in a cognitive sort of conceptual way. We deal with projects, and we deal with issues that address us that are more visceral, and the issue of fear is more of a visceral one. So I can't really respond to that question in a conceptual way, because I don't think fear works in a conceptual way. I think it's more of a living element, a living being in the environment, and it's just our experience that RSF is unique in the way it operates, and therefore, as you said, mitigates fear, reduces it. And I don't know, we haven't encountered any equivalent environment. I'm sure there are others. It's just it's just an accomplishment that's been very attractive to us. I apologize if that doesn't really address your question as fully as you'd like.
I was just wondering if there are other systems, macroscopic efforts to eliminate fear, or allow fear to dissipate in the larger sphere of human experience. Other than your specific, but that's okay. We can discover.
Yeah, I think that the thing that Michael and RSF share is this focus on concrete projects as being the manifestation of where we can bring our values into each one of those transactions and each one of those projects. And I feel like that's been the key for us, as opposed to charting out conceptual territory and then working towards that. We've just taken it literally, you know, individual by individual and project by project to try and see where we can bring love instead of fear into the transaction. Other questions or comments? Yes, Arno, remember to say who you are and where you're from.
I'm Hester with Sloan in San Francisco. The surfer movie, I think, made it pretty clear the way how we work with money is not just, most of us don't work with investments. Most of us actually work with transactions. And all those surfers who move the money actually move the money, transactional money, not necessarily investment money. And I think what I really like about what RSF does and also Slow Money is actually lowering the barriers for people to influence what they can do with money, like going from the high net worth individuals to just some savings and some loans down to the transactional level.
Ben? Yes? I would agree. And anyone else?
Yeah, I'd love to comment on that. Okay. Actually, I think that we all have the opportunity when we talk about this new economy, we are the caregivers of this new economy right now. Everybody that's in this room, which is both daunting and liberating. Localization of transaction to the smallest form, voting your dollars, as I mentioned, but also just investing it back into smaller, medium-sized transactions is huge. So I totally agree. Go local movements, slow money movement. These are very important things for us in the room to embrace. I truly believe that is the solution if we can see it every transaction as an important one, an important decision.
Other questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Papa, the puppet show is starting.
Go ahead and watch it. I
didn't
hear some of the other questions, so I thought I'd go for the mic. I'm interested in the area of jobs. We're hearing about jobs. I'm much more interested in not working. And there's a whole international movement for a guaranteed national income. I wonder what Rudolf Steiner Foundation thinks about that or what they're doing about it. You may have heard of the word Luddite. It's come to mean someone who resists progress. But during the Industrial Revolution in my own country, Ned Ludd and his friends destroyed machines that were destroying their jobs. He didn't destroy all the machines. He destroyed the machines in those companies where the owner would take all the profit for himself. And the displaced people would get nothing. And we're still in this kind of an economy. So that's my question.
Well, yeah, thanks. I can start, and then if you'd like to fill in, feel free. I'm not going to be able to take the first one on, because this is the first I'm hearing of it, and that's a complex topic. I'd love to hear more about it. If anyone out here would like to comment on the idea of having a guaranteed income, that would be an interesting conversation. On the second part of what you're saying, that's exactly what I feel like is happening right now. I think that people are so disillusioned and have been affected so deeply by what's gone on since 2008 in terms of our current financial crisis that we're in today, that they really are questioning a lot of the core assumptions of our economy and our financial system. And then they're turning it inward to say, where am I doing my banking? Where am I doing my investing? What products am I purchasing and supporting and connecting the dots that way? And so in the midst of some, you know, extreme examples, I had to laugh actually earlier this week, because this trader at UBS Tony may have heard of it, that lost $2.3 billion for this big Swiss bank. The name of the group that he was a part of is the Global Synthetic Equities Group. And I just have to laugh that the name itself tells you everything. That's actually a technical term on Wall Street to refer to money and financial transactions as a global synthetic equities group. The irony of that, the fact that the irony wasn't pointed out in the article, I'd just be curious how many people that read that thought of that. So it's a big topic to take on, but I just feel like what I'm sensing in my travels and through our work at RSF is that more and more people are wanting to bring money back down to the ground so that it really represents, sometimes the way we describe it is that money is a form of energy that connects human beings in relationships of service. And I think that many more people are starting to approach it that way. But it'll take a while. Yes, ma'am. If you can say who you are and where you're from.
What's the investment levels that you, like an everyday person putting maybe $35,000 into, is that an acceptable level of entry just for a savings account? And then what about other kinds of methods of withdrawal, like do you use credit cards? What other kinds of things do you have there that can be useful to the everyday person that's perhaps using through a credit union, you know, taking the money out of your banks, because most of them are just exactly as you described. But we need some basic tools to also work with the money that we put in savings and checking. Do you have a checking account, for example?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. So quickly, what we have is it's a lot like a bank CD. You can invest as little as $1,000 into our loan fund, and it's like a bank CD that has a 90-day term, so a 3-month term. So it's fairly liquid, it's very low risk, low volatility, and you get to participate in all these loans that we're making to these beneficial organizations. We don't offer checking accounts or savings accounts, and those you can find at community banks and green banks in the area. New Resource Bank, One Pacific Coast Bank, Exchange Bank are just a few here in the Bay Area that offer those kinds of services. Yes, sir. I know we just have another. This is the last question. I'm being cut off. Yes, our comment.
Mark from Oakland, talking about transforming the world and how it will use money. Is RSF interacting with other financial institutions to try to spread your values to some of the larger institutions? We can put our money locally, but obviously we have to deal with large global institutions that are also dealing with money. I'm just curious how RSF is interacting with a larger system.
That's a great question. And the way we're looking at it is to create a very healthy, diversified, robust network of small to small, as opposed to feeling like we can go into the big Wall Street banks and transform them from within. In fact, I just wrote a blog post a couple weeks ago called Why We Turned Down $300 Million because a big Wall Street bank approached us about doing a co-branded loan fund. And we just couldn't get comfortable with the terms of it and where the money was coming from and how many layers of intermediation there were. And we could, you know, what governs everything we do is that everything's based on trying to create financial transactions that are direct, transparent, and personal based on long-term relationships. And these guys are still stuck in the world of complex, opaque, and anonymous based on short-term outcomes. And so it's not to acknowledge that important work needs to be done. I think it is happening from people inside those organizations that are fed up with having a global synthetic equities group. I think they're starting to say, you know, what can we do that's more real here? And they're probably more knowledgeable about how to shift those cultures within those kinds of organizations. So the way we look at it, I don't have time to go into it right now, but we do work actively with lots of other financial intermediaries that are smaller, that are really trying to stake out kind of the deep end of the pool of how we can move from what's more of a quantified, two-dimensional world, as Michael was saying, to a more quality, you know, three-dimensional world of working with money. That's a good question. Happy to talk with anyone further after this. Thanks very much for coming.